I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
America first does not mean America alone. To the contrary, it is a call for deeper collaboration and mutual respect among trade partners.
Trump blinks. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent appears to be trying to de-escalate the global trade war that Trump launched just weeks ago. As the Dow Jones is on pace for its worst April since the Great Depression, we'll speak with the American Prospect's Robert Kuttner on Trump's trade war and Trump's attacks on news organizations, including CBS. This week, the head of CBS's 60 Minutes quit, saying the show's independence is compromised. Plus, we speak to the Nobel Prize-winning journalist Maria Ressa about the global fight for press freedom and the death of Pope Francis. She recently spoke at the Vatican.
Technology rewards. Rewards lies. Think about that. The first time I met Pope Francis, I said, Pope Francis, it's against the Ten Commandments.
Then to Trump's war on children.
Across a range of federal agencies that not a lot of people know about, like the Children's Bureau and the Office of Family Assistance, the Trump administration has been cutting programs and services for children, including child support enforcement and resources for investigating child abuse and child protection services.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, the Palestinian Ministry of Health reports Israeli attacks killed 50 people and wounded more than 150 others over the past 24 hours. Among the dead are three Palestinians who were killed when an Israeli drone struck a food distribution center in central Gaza. On Wednesday, Israel's far-right national security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir claimed during a visit to the U.S. that top Republican lawmakers support the policy of bombing food and humanitarian aid depots in Gaza. After he was feted at a dinner in his honor Tuesday evening at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, Ben-Gvir wrote of the Republicans, quote, they express support for my very clear position on how to act in Gaza and that the food and aid depots should be bombed in order to create military and political pressure to bring our hostages home safely, Ben-Gvir wrote in remarks translated from Hebrew. Separately, Ben-Gvir was confronted by student protesters and others on Wednesday after attending an event near Yale University. This all comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu returned to a Tel Aviv courtroom this week to give testimony as he faces three separate corruption cases. Netanyahu is charged with fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes. Authorities in Indian-administered Kashmir say they've identified three suspects in Tuesday's deadly assault on tourists in the resort town of Pahalgam, which killed 26 people and injured more than a dozen others, most of them Indian nationals. Two of the three suspects are Pakistanis. In the wake of the attack, India closed its main border with Pakistan and canceled visas for Pakistani visitors, ordering them to leave India within 48 hours. India also canceled a landmark water treaty with Pakistan and summoned Pakistan's top diplomat to New Delhi amidst growing tensions between the nuclear-armed neighbors. Overnight, Russian missile attacks killed at least eight people in Kyiv in Russia's deadliest strikes on Ukraine's capital since last summer. Dozens of others were wounded. The attack came as the Trump administration's been threatening to withdraw from peace talks. On Wednesday, Trump demanded Kyiv accept a plan that would allow Russia to maintain territory it's gained during its three-year-long invasion of Ukraine and barring NATO membership for Kyiv. The plan has been rejected by President Volodymyr Zelensky. The federal judge overseeing the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father who was sent to a prison in El Salvador after an administrative error, granted the Trump administration an additional week to share what steps it's taking to ensure his return. Meanwhile, Abrego Garcia's wife had to be moved to a safe house after the Department of Homeland Security posted her address online, sharing a photo of a 2021 protective order that featured her home address. Federal immigration agents in Florida have opened Operation Tidal Wave, a first-of-its-kind coordinated effort with state police that's seeking to arrest 800 undocumented immigrants this week. Some 230 Florida law enforcement agencies have signed on to an initiative that allows ICE to deputize officers to act as immigration agents. In Vermont, agents with U.S. Customs and Border Protection raided the state's largest dairy farm on Monday, arresting 8 immigrant workers who've since been jailed at the Northwest State Correctional Facility. It's the largest immigration enforcement action in Vermont's recent history. The Republican Governor Phil Scott responded to the raid by calling on Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform, writing in a statement, quote, "Migrant workers are an essential part of our communities. They are our neighbors and friends, have kids in our schools, shop at our businesses, and play an important role in our economy and workforce," Governor Scott said. In Southern California, the Department of Homeland Security says its agents arrested 10 people at a raid on day laborers gathered outside a Home Depot store in Pomona Tuesday morning. This comes as advocates are raising alarm over the targeting of Southeast Asian immigrants in Los Angeles and Orange County. In the months since Trump returned to office, ICE has detained a growing number of Cambodian, Laotian, and Vietnamese immigrants, even though their deportation orders had been placed on indefinite hold, sometimes for several decades. Here in New York, immigrant delivery workers rallied outside the headquarters of DoorDash Wednesday to demand the food delivery app cease its predatory labor practices, including wage theft. The protest was organized by Los Deliveristas Unidas. This is Santos Suk, a 25-year-old delivery worker who's owed nearly $2,000 in wages by DoorDash dating back to 2022.
It's not fair that they steal our wages. We want to work. We have families in our home countries, and our wages help support our families. We are here to demand justice from DoorDash. They are multimillionaires, and it's unacceptable that they owe us money. We face many risks. People think our work is easy. It's not. We risk our lives in the snow, in the rain, in the heat, in traffic. My message to my fellow immigrants is, do not be afraid. We have to keep going. We are here to fight.
Earlier this year, DoorDash was ordered to pay nearly $17 million for unlawfully using customer tips to subsidize the wages of its delivery workers. A dozen states, including New York and Oregon, have sued President Trump over his, quote, arbitrary imposed tariffs on Wednesday, arguing such decisions must be made by Congress. This comes a week after California launched its own tariff lawsuit. On Wednesday, President Trump suggested he could reimpose what he called reciprocal tariffs on some countries in 2 to 3 weeks if they fail to make a deal with him soon. Share prices of President Trump's meme coins surged by over 50% Wednesday after the cryptocurrency's website announced its top 220 investors would be invited to attend a private gala dinner hosted by Trump. The promotion also offers a, quote, ultra-exclusive VIP reception with the president and a White House tour for the top 25 Trump meme coin investors. The anti-corruption group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, known as CREW, called the promotion, quote, one of the most blatant and appalling instances of selling access to the presidency we've ever seen, unquote. The European Union fined Apple and Meta $800 million for violating the Digital Markets Act, a new law designed to prevent anti-competitive practices by big tech. Meta is accused of forcing users to either pay for Facebook and Instagram subscriptions or to make their personal data available to advertisers. Trump has threatened to retaliate against European regulations on U.S. tech companies. Prosecutors and defense attorneys made opening statements Wednesday in a retrial of Harvey Weinstein on rape charges. The disgraced movie mogul was convicted of rape in 2020, but that landmark ruling was later overturned due to a judge's error. This time around, the case will be heard by a majority female jury. This trial will also feature a newly added allegation by former model Kaya Sokola, who accuses Weinstein of forcing oral sex on her in 2006. Sokola's attorney spoke to reporters after Wednesday's opening arguments here in New York.
The Me Too movement is alive and well. There's been incredible changes in legislation surrounding sexual assault. I think as a society, we are starting to have a better collective understanding about the trauma that sexual assault survivors have faced. And we are able to differentiate these rape myths and the victim blaming, which is a tactic that Weinstein's lawyers have used in this trial.
In media news, the longstanding executive producer of CBS's 60 Minutes has quit. Bill Owens wrote in a memo to his staff, quote, "It has become clear that I would not be allowed to run the show as I have always run it, to make independent decisions based on what was right for 60 Minutes, right for the audience," he said. Trump is suing CBS for $20 billion over a segment last year he said was edited to be favorable to Kamala Harris. It was an interview with her they edited down. In January, the New York Times reported CBS's parent company, Paramount, could reach a settlement with Trump in that case. Trump has also called for CBS to lose its broadcasting license after airing pieces on Ukraine and Greenland he disagreed with. Meanwhile, a planned $8 billion merger between Paramount and Skydance Media is currently awaiting FCC approval. Skydance's CEO, David Ellison, is the son of billionaire Larry Ellison, co-founder of Oracle and a close Trump ally. In Michigan, FBI agents and local police raided the homes of University of Michigan Palestinian rights activists in Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, and Canton on Wednesday. The targets of the raids participated in campus anti-war protests. Attorney General Dana Nessel claims they're part of a vandalism investigation. Rights groups condemned the raids, with the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, asserting, quote, "peaceful dissent is not a crime," unquote. In California, a group of students at Occidental College are entering their fourth day of a hunger strike to demand Occidental divest from companies tied to Israel's slaughter in Gaza, protect free speech on campus, and shield students from attacks by ICE and the LAPD. These are some of the striking students speaking Wednesday.
Today marks day 3 of our hunger strike and day 564 of Israel's most recent intensification of the 77-year genocide against the Palestinian people. Since March, Israel has been enforcing a man-made blockade and creating a famine.
Occidental College is complicit in this ongoing genocide, and we as the students are committed to holding the administration accountable to being on the right side of history.
In more higher education news, colleges belonging to what's known as the Big Ten Alliance are establishing a mutual defense compact to fight back against Trump's escalating legal, financial, and political attacks on universities. Those who already voted to sign on to the pact include Rutgers and University of Michigan. The Washington Post reports the Trump administration is preparing to remove federal protections for at least 6 national monuments spanning millions of acres of land across Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Utah. This comes as the Interior Department is moving to fast-track approvals for coal, gas, oil, and mineral projects on public lands and waters, reducing the typical length of an environmental review to just 14 or 28 weeks, down from 1 to 2 years. The Trump administration is justifying the change by its declaration of a so-called energy emergency. Environmental groups have vowed to sue to block the move. A new report by the American Lung Association finds nearly half of people in the U.S. are breathing in dangerous levels of air pollutants. Scientists say larger and more frequent wildfires triggered by the climate crisis have contributed to the nation's worsening air quality crisis. And in more environmental news, the worst ever recorded event of coral bleaching has spread to 84% of the world's reefs. The bleaching, brought about by global heating, seriously threatens oceanic biodiversity and could lead to the death of vital underwater ecosystems. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. President Trump is facing increasing criticism from corporate America over his decision to launch a global trade war. On Monday, the CEOs of Walmart, Target, and Home Depot met with Trump at the White House to warn about the impact of Trump's trade policies. A day later, Trump signaled he's open to substantially lowering tariffs on China. Trump is also toning down his attacks on Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, who he threatened to fire. This all comes as global stock markets remain in turmoil over Trump's trade policies. The Wall Street Journal reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average is headed for its worst April performance since the Great Depression.
We're joined now by Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. His most recent piece is headlined Trump Blinks. Kuttner's latest book is Going Big, FDR's Legacy, Biden's New Deal, and the Struggle to Save Democracy. Robert Kuttner is also a professor at Brandeis University's Heller School. Robert, welcome back to Democracy Now! So let's begin with this U-turn, with this reversal of Trump's. When he started talking about 145% tariffs on China, it was like someone else had proposed them and he wanted to turn that around. So you've got from China to the possible firing of Jerome Powell and the turnaround on that. Can you talk about the significance of this and what it means that the Dow Jones is plummeting to the point of being compared to the Great Depression?
Well, Amy, I've been obsessively concerned with one question. Where are the firewalls? Where are the speed bumps? How might we slow Trump down? And there are maybe three or four ways that we can do this. One is by activism. One is by the Supreme Court, remembering that its job is to protect the rule of law, and that seems to be happening. And one is financial markets. Now, as someone who spent my entire career criticizing the power of Wall Street, it doesn't give me great pleasure that financial markets can be a source of restraint on Trump. On the other hand, in World War II, you know, we had an alliance with Stalin to beat Hitler. So you take the allies you can take. And what's happened in the past few days, and Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, is the interesting figure here. Markets crashed, first of all, when Trump declared Liberation Day and tried to impose tariffs on the whole world. They crashed again when he made noises about firing Jerome Powell. They crashed again when he did this lunacy with China. And what Bessent has done, he's sort of the most conventional Wall Street guy of all of Trump's advisors. So he kind of speaks for financial markets. And he basically said to Trump, you really don't want to do this. And so Trump walked it back. And if you look at markets, financial markets, the Dow Jones, the S&P 500 in the past few days, you know, they've bounced around like a yo-yo, and they've bounced around primarily in response to whether Trump is doubling down on this craziness or whether he's backing off.
And you've said, Robert, that Scott Bessent plays the role of the, quote, sole grown-up in the room in the Trump administration.
Right.
So if you could say a little bit about his background and what kind of influence you think he has on Trump.
It's very interesting. I mean, he is the most atypical of all of the close-in Trump advisors. He used to be a Democrat. He worked for George Soros for a long time. He's the guy who came up with a bet that crashed the pound in the mid-90s, and then he set up his own hedge fund. He's gay. He's married to a man. He's about as unlike most of MAGA as he could be, and Trump picked him because he wanted one traditional Wall Street guy to reassure financial markets. And Bessent has not been shy about using this influence to kind of talk Trump off the ledge and get him to back off some of the crazier stuff. Now, we'll see whether Bessent's days are numbered, right? Because Trump is paranoid about loyalty. He's petulant. He could turn on Bessent. But I think for the moment, he's following Bessent's advice. Now, here's the complication. It's sort of easy to say, okay, I'm not going to fire Jerome Powell. It's much harder to do a deal with China. China plays a long game much better than we do. As I wrote, China's time horizon is measured in centuries, if not millennia. And Trump's attention span is measured in hours, if not days. And you don't just do a deal with China. China has an entire economic system based on mercantilism, so-called industrial policy, using state subsidies to build the world's second most powerful economy, soon to be the world's most powerful economy. You don't just have a staged meeting with Xi Jinping and say, okay, we'll cut the tariffs and you change your whole economic and political system. That's not how it works. So it's not clear what kind of deal is in the offing. And Trump has basically weakened his own hand by doing this ridiculous 145% tariffs and then humiliatingly having to walk it back. So Xi's hand is stronger than it was before Trump did this.
And if you could explain, actually, what do you think happened? Because, I mean, just to clarify, the tariffs that Trump had imposed on China were at 145%. China retaliated by imposing 125% on American goods to China. Then he says earlier this week to reporters in the Oval Office that tariffs on China will, quote, come down substantially, saying, he said, we're going to be very nice and they're going to be very nice and we'll see what happens. And then China today came out and said, actually, there are no negotiations going on between the U.S. and China on that, and much less has there been any agreement.
Well, exactly. So a lot of what Trump is saying is in the realm of wishful thinking. And the reason he backed off is that so many American consumer goods, American producer goods like auto parts, are intimately bound up with sources of supply that come from China. Now, think about what 145% tariffs mean. That means that if something costs $100, it suddenly costs $100 plus 145% of $100. So it now costs $245. That's tantamount to a boycott. It's like a complete boycott of Chinese exports. And after all these years of neoliberalism, where so much stuff gets outsourced to China, we're very dependent on China. The flip side, and this has to do with China's retaliatory tariffs, our biggest export is, guess what? It's soybeans. It's 9% of all of American exports, not farm exports, all exports. And the biggest customer for American soybeans is China. Well, if China's tariffs are over 100% on American soybeans, China's going to start getting its soybeans from Brazil or from Argentina. So you've got farmers very upset as well. And you've got all of industry and all of agriculture telling Trump, back off, don't do this to us. So, of course, he has to back off. And China's in the catbird seat, and China can very well say, well, we don't have any deals pending. We didn't do this. He did this. And he's weaker than it was before he was before. And this is classic Trump. You create a crisis, then you say, well, actually, I'm going to back off and the crisis is over. And you end up with yourself and the country worse than before you started.
And then, of course, the question is how much he and his friends make when he suddenly does a turnaround and the stock market goes up. Robert Kuttner, 10 seconds to respond to that.
Well, he's totally corrupt. He doesn't make any bones about the fact that he's totally corrupt. You had the item about cryptocurrencies. I mean, he's the ultimate grifter.
As in grifter, not to be confused with drifter, Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. We're going to link to your piece, Trump Blinks, but stay with us because we want to talk about your other piece, Is the Press Next? We'll speak with Robert Kuttner and the Nobel Prize-winning journalist Maria Ressa. She knows something about corruption and pressure on the press coming from the Philippines. Stay with us. Will You Remember? By Filipino singer Eva Eugenio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We're continuing our conversation with Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect, to talk about another of his recent articles. This one headlined, "Is the Press Next?" Kuttner writes, quote, "As Trump tries to destroy one free institution after another, universities, law firms, independent public agencies, trade unions, sooner or later he will come for the press," Kuttner writes. And Trump's attacks on the press have already begun. In December, ABC News settled a defamation suit filed by President-elect Trump instead of taking the case to court. As part of the deal, ABC will donate $15 million to Trump's presidential library. The White House has also banned the Associated Press from covering some presidential events over its refusal to refer to the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America. After suffering a court setback, the White House moved to restrict access to all of the wire services.
President Trump has also repeatedly attacked 60 Minutes, CBS's flagship investigative news program. Trump has urged the Federal Communications Commission to pull CBS's license. And in his personal capacity, Trump has filed a $20 billion lawsuit against CBS over how 60 Minutes edited an interview with Kamala Harris last year. This all comes as CBS's parent company, Paramount Global, is seeking FCC approval for its proposed $8 billion merger with Skydance Media. Earlier this week, there was a major shakeup at 60 Minutes. The show's executive producer, Bill Owens, resigned, saying, quote, "Over the past months, it's become clear that I would not be allowed to run the show as I have always run it, to make independent decisions based on what was right for 60 Minutes, right for the audience," he said. Semaphore has reported Paramount's Shari Redstone had begun personally keeping tabs on 60 Minutes segments about Trump. Robert Kuttner of The American Prospect is still with us, along with Maria Ressa, co-founder and CEO of the Philippine independent news site Rappler, who received the Nobel Peace Prize in 2021 for her work defending free expression in the Philippines. Robert Kuttner, we're going to start with you laying out what is taking place here when you have 60 Minutes head leaving, saying he can no longer ensure its independence, and you have this merger that Shari Redstone is trying to accomplish with Larry Ellison, the Oracle founder, and his son, David Ellison, known Trump allies. Talk about all of this.
Well, my worry is that this is just the beginning. If they wanted to become really systematic in this article, "Is the Press Next?" I ticked off all the things they might do. So the first thing they might do is they might go after the nonprofit tax-exempt status of much of the progressive media, so-called 501c3 status, that allows you to get foundation grants. And to be a 501c3, you're not supposed to be political. And, you know, just between us and your audience, a lot of the left press is pretty tough on Trump, as it ought to be. So Trump could go to the now, it's illegal for the president to, abruptly pull the tax exemption of any organization. But you could get the IRS to launch an investigation, and you could find that, shock, shock, several progressive media are actually pretty critical of Trump, and maybe they don't deserve a 501c3 status. That, in turn, would spook their foundations, because they're also 501c3s, they're tax-exempt, and you could threaten their tax exemption. So that's just one thing he could do. You already have a kind of anticipatory capitulation, appeasement, on the part of big corporate owners of the Washington Post and the LA Times. And sometimes the New York Times feels like it's pulling its punches, because when a billionaire owns a media property, I hate the word, they have their other business interests to look out for, Shari Redstone being a classical example. So you've got self-censorship. That's a second evil. You've also got the fact that, you know, public broadcasting broadcasts on frequencies that are allocated by the FCC. The FCC could say, hey, actually, we need those frequencies for national security purposes, and public radio stations, you don't get to broadcast over the air anymore.
And so, Congress has already started an investigation into PBS and NPR.
That's correct. So Trump could play hardball. Now, the good news here is this is protected by the First Amendment. And in the last segment, we talked about